Hello, and I want to welcome everybody to the Creepercast, first ever short film review. Do we have a name for this yet, Jeff?
Actually, I'm calling it the independent feature film review.
Independent feature.
Because it's not a short film.
Yeah, it's not a short film. Yeah, it's not a short film. Yeah, you're
exactly
right. So, the Creepercast, first ever independent feature film review. This is a short monthly Creepercast bonus that we're giving to you guys, where we spotlight a independent film and an independent director that we think is worth watching.
That's the short of it, yes.
This is not a full Creepercast episode. This is just us talking about an independent film that we watched and giving you our thoughts on it. Jeff, why don't you tell them about our first review?
Our first independent feature film review was brought to us by writer Matt Dean, who's also, I thought he was the director of this one too, but it looks like Tom Hardy's actually the director. But of course, the reason why this one was brought to our attention, because of our friendship with Bill Oberst Jr. I don't think that, you know, Bill actually could, you know, ask this guy to contact us. I think he just did it on his own when he realized that we were such a fan. But he did contact us and asked us to check out The Devil Within: Rise of Evil. Now, the important part of this film is that this is a movie that originally came out in 2010. But what happened was is that in the last couple of years, the director and writer have gotten together and re-edited the film.
Right.
So now there is a 2012 version.
And what's great about this is we've had the chance, or I don't know if you have, I've had the chance to watch both of them.
Yes,
kind of compare and contrast. And it's often said that the editor is the last writer. And what they did with this film certainly emphasizes that point. In the original 2010, I didn't think it was a bad film, but it certainly didn't have, it wasn't as tight, and it didn't hit you quite like
the original 2010 was actually, there were scenes in the original 2010 I liked just because they were funny scenes.
Right.
And but the new cut is very streamlined and it flows really good.
Right, exactly. They changed the music, they changed the shot sequences, they changed quite a few things that I think made the film a lot better.
They extended some stuff too.
Yeah,
they extended some stuff too.
So I'm going to play the trailer now. The trailer that I'm going to play is from the 2010 film. They're close enough together that you still get a feel for what's going on.
What do you want for me to be for you tonight, honey? A good girl? Bad girl? Did I get rough?
You are such a tramp.
If you can't please your man, you shouldn't be allowed to have one.
There's no way these girls are from our school, man.
I would jump that.
I heard it's your birthday today.
Yeah, big 1-8.
Come here. I do not see what he sees in her.
My brother wants this to go well tonight. If you make me look bad, you two won't live to regret it.
Where is the weed?
On a trip, relax.
Within each of us lies the ability to do great good or great evil.
Do you want some?
What is it?
Make you feel really good.
I don't know.
Dude, they're dead.
What are you talking about?
They are upstairs, covered in blood. It's a curse.
There's no curse. Oh my God.
Get out of here, Rachel.
This is not a joke.
It's not too late to turn around and run out of this house.
Now we can finally be together, Serena.
Just like my mama.
So I love on IMDb for the description, all it says is a high school party rages in the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah. No, there's a little bit more to it than that.
There is a lot more. This film is really three different storylines that go on throughout the film that all converge at the end. You have the storyline of a girl that is basically the outcast of the school. She's beat by her dad. You have this whole domestic violence issue going on. You have another one of the popular kids that make fun of and ostracize everybody else that throw this big party and stuff. And then you have Bill Oberst Jr., who plays Principal Edwards, who is the creepiest principal ever.
Ever, yeah.
So I'm like, is everybody in this film a pedo or what?
Yeah. I mean, he's not a pedo because he waits till they're 18.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. But, I mean, then there's, you know, creepy pedo incest dad.
Yes. And so, and they all converge. And so it's a really interesting storyline that they went with this. One scene that was cut out from the recut that was in the original was actually that I thought would have been great to have in there was actually the teacher near the beginning when he was talking about the seven deadly sins, because that's really the major setup.
Pretty much what the major setup of the film. Well, this is it starts as and feels like your typical high school party slasher film.
Yeah.
And yes. then it just, but it has all these, so obviously having the discussion of the seven deadly sins at the beginning would be great. And then, especially since they followed it up with the roadside preacher every once in a while popping in. And I really liked that. And on that note, on the roadside preacher note, just because I came to that point, I really liked that because it really seemed so disjointed from everything else.
Yes. And he's really another. So he's really the fourth storyline that really converges.
Yeah. And it he's just more, I think he's more comic relief, so to speak. I mean,
every time he came on the screen, it was like I was back in college in the quad and there was a preacher Rick.
Oh, I remember him that would stand on the soapbox and all but beat you with a Bible. Yes, I remember him. I wonder if he's still there. I should visit sometime since I work in that city.
See if he's wandering around.
Yes, I work in that city. Although he was never there during the winter. I have to wait till spring.
You have to wait till because apparently you can only be saved by Jesus in warm weather.
All right. So this movie stars Elizabeth DiPrinzo, Ryan Harrison, and Bill Oberst Jr. It was directed by Tom Hardy, written by Matt Dean, and I'm going to go with the fact that it was a low budget independent film, and certainly some of the shots that they used, you could tell it had that low budget feel, i.e. they had a lot of close ups so that you couldn't kind of tell what kind of background was behind them because it didn't fit in, or, you know, there were pickup shots. But you know what? That didn't detract from the film. I actually think that in a way that added to the feel of the film.
Well, it gave it the more, especially the high school scenes, it made it feel high school.
Yes.
The fact that it was, such low budget, put together so low budget. And then the party scenes made it feel high school party. I mean, I think the low budget actually lent a lot to the help in the story.
Yes.
Like you just said. I mean, it was like, so I pretty much agreed with you. That's weird.
Yes, it is.
I wanted to point out, too, that actress Elizabeth DiPrinzio is actually, she's become a B-horror scream queen. She was also in Scary or Die. We have Gray Damon, the one who plays her her boyfriend, I guess.
John.
I don't know.
Yes.
Yes. He's now in True Blood.
Oh, that's right. He is.
So, I mean, these are accomplished actors.
And Friday Night Lights.
Yes. Yes, there's that one as well. So these are accomplished actors. And I have told Matt that, after we do this review, that I hoped we can get Elizabeth DiPrinzio and maybe a couple of others to do.
Bill will come on. In fact, I've teased him with a new intro for him.
Yes, that's true. You have.
but just a great ensemble cast. That's one thing that I have to say about this is that You know, that's one thing that generally when you look at independent films, you know, they may have one or two people that do great, and then the rest are just kind of whoever they could pick up along the way that they could, you know, friends, family, and stuff. This one, the whole cast was just a great ensemble, and I really loved the feel and the way that everyone interacted with each other. You know what else I'm going to mention, too, with the recut? Even the coloring was different. Did you notice that?
I guess now that I think about it, I didn't notice it at first, but now that I think about it, yes, I do. It was a lot crisper. And
yeah, they recolored it. They did a lot of stuff, including the soundtrack. And I want to talk about that soundtrack.
Really good.
I if we ever get him on, I have to ask Matt who did the soundtrack, because I want it. I love the soundtrack.
It is a really good soundtrack. And actually, some of the stuff actually sound familiar, too. That was the thing, is like there was one track on there that I was like, is that Linkin Park? Because it had that kind of like a Linkin Park feel to it. I'm looking at some information about it, though, and like Elizabeth DiPrinzio actually sings on one of the new tracks. So that made it kind of, you know, it's always fun for me when you have the actress getting in on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which I always enjoy that. So, but like I said, the music, the change of music just helped the flow so much better.
It did. It helped the feel. I mean, that was a big, I think the music is a big part of this film in how you feel, especially how they use it to punctuate some of the stuff that's going on in people internally with people.
And you could tell that's what he intended with the first film just from the trailer. You know, from the first cut, because of the way he used the music in the trailer to you know, punctuate certain things.
Right, exactly.
And this recut really does follow that really well. The only thing that I was missing, for the most part, was I actually enjoyed the part when they were, you know, when the scene when they were leaving the high school and the two dorks were like going back and forth. And there was a much longer, funnier scene about that. And he kind of chopped it down to, you know, its bare minimum. So that was, but that's like, after, as I'm watching the film, though, I'm like, but it still flows so much better. I don't care anymore about
right. Yeah, he that, cut yeah. it down. He took out some of the stuff like that did have some, you know, comic relief, but it certainly added to the pace of the film.
And Mike, you haven't said much.
No.
Well, you guys keep comparing and contrasting, and I was unaware that I was supposed to watch the original.
Well, nobody said you had to.
Nobody said they had to.
And actually, I'm glad you didn't, because now you can give insight as, you know, seeing it with fresh eyes.
I mean, I enjoyed this movie, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying as far as, you know, the low-budget feel. I thought the cast interacted very well with each other. Even the girl, and I believe she's only done one other film, the sister who was disabled.
Mentally
and
I'm not handicapped.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly, you know, what, because obviously there was also some physical handicap going on there. But I thought she did a phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah, even the whole, even right down to slumping the shoulders forward the whole time and.
Right. And like, I don't know if she was, you know, acting or if she actually suffers from some sort of disability. But that's kind of one of those things in movies, you know, do you hire an actor like in Rain Man, you know, to portray someone who's got autism or whatever? Or do you actually try and like with that TV show, Corky, whatever his name was. Who actually has that disability and hope that they can come across as a believable actor. I just think whatever way they went with that, I thought she did really well. The only notes that I really had about this was a couple of real small things. They were clearly using a Wii,
yes.
But so we know we're somewhat advanced, you know. But why a Wii and not a PS3 or an Xbox, whatever? But then we cut to the scene of the abused the girl with the abusive home life, and she's still on MySpace. Like, wait a minute, what's going on there? And then what is up with that car ride? The older brother goes to give someone a ride or something, and he's gone literally for three quarters of the movie.
It's kind of like, you know, the the guy in summer school that went to the bathroom and doesn't return until the end.
I'm like, yeah, where was he driving to? The only other thing for me, watching this movie and never not really knowing anything about it and until, you know, you had me watch it, I really liked it, but I kind of saw the ending coming.
Right.
As far as who the killer was, going back and reading on IMDb it had to be on IMDb. Somebody was talking about a twist ending or something. And I'm like, kind of saw it.
Yeah. But you know what? I will say that it was a twist ending, in the fact that, you kind of knew what was going to go on with, the girl that was being abused and the principal Edwards. And I think that's where the twist comes in, because for a long time, the person that I thought it actually was, it wasn't. And then when I saw that person, I had to all of a sudden switch to, okay, who would be my next choice? And in that case, he did. I think Matt and Tom did, the writer and the director, did a great job of giving you enough clues that you can figure it out, but also giving you enough red herrings that it'll take you off to figure, that it could be this person, or this person.
Yeah, I think it was, it wasn't so blatantly obvious at first. You can make an assumption, based on who's doing it, because that's the first real, something happening with this person. But it's all blind alleys. It's all blind alleys for the most part. And I think also too, and I know we've talked about this on the regular show many times, is that sometimes it's whoever you put in a role and how well they can play the role, you automatically start to assume it's them. So in this case, I'm watching this movie going, well, Bill O'Bierce Jr. is in it, and he's the best creepy guy around, so it's got to be him.
Right.
And then, of course, you get these, and then a bunch of twists. So it could be, it could be the goth chick. Oh, no, wait. It could be the,
the sister.
Yeah.
It could be, and that's the great thing.
When you're looking back, especially when they give you the montage at the end, when you're looking back, you're like, oh, duh.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's one of them retrospect kind of things that you're like, well, now it all makes sense.
So with a first watch, I can say yes. I would say that yes, they were always there. It's kind of like the Sixth Sense. It's always there, but it isn't until the end when you're like, oh, duh.
Yeah. Exactly. So, with all of that, one other thing that I want to touch on is that, with a movie like this, two things I want to touch on. One, I wish I would have grown up in California when I was in high school, because my high school parties were parties never like that good.
And I'm pretty sure I never went to school with chicks as hot as that either.
No. So,
or as loose as that, just throwing that out there.
With that, I kind of wish I grew up in California, but then, on top of that, I think they did a great job of, raising the sexual tension throughout the first probably quarter of the movie, where you're like, okay, come on, you have all these hot girls, you have all this, and there's no boobs. And then, it's like, finally, yes, it's like, it's
overload.
It's like a triumphant. So, I mean, he placed it perfectly. It's not too close to the beginning where you're like, oh, boobs. And it's not too far in where you just gave up. It's like perfect where you're like, come on, I want to see some boobs. There they are.
I just have to say, it's never too early for boobs. I have never felt that going, well, no, that's not true. One film ever, and I only watched 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes of it. It was Thanksgiving 3.
All right.
That one was like, okay, boobs, I'm done.
Overall, as far as stabs, honestly, I would love to give this 5 stabs. I'm going to actually give it 4. Because it is not a perfect film, but you know what? It is a very enjoyable film. IMDb out of 10 gave it a 2.1. I think they are solely misguided. It is much better than that, especially the recut.
Yeah, the recut is definitely a lot better. You can't you know, stress enough that it's better mostly, again, because of flow and, you know, shot sequences and things like that. You can't fault the fact that, I mean, so what? It took them 2 years to, you know, to come up with it.
And then the other thing that I think was great about this, maybe it's because I come from a background of filmmaking, is that you understand, you know, when you see some of the shots, like in the principal's office, where it's, you know, this very creative, and I love the shot of Bill O'Burst standing there, and they're shooting him upwards, you know, showing her legs in the foreground and him in the background. And then they cut to another shot, and theoretically they should have cut to a third shot, but they cut back to that same shot, you know, and I can forgive that because you understand that one day when you're on a tight budget, you're also on a very tight shooting schedule.
Yeah.
And in that, they probably didn't have time to reset lights and redo everything. So, you know, that's stuff that I can forgive. And I think he did great with the tools and the money and what he had to work with.
And even considering, I mean, the and I think about this more now because, you know, having written a script and knowing and trying to figure out locations and stuff for it, is that when you think about the locations he used and the shots that he used and the amount of people he was working with for actors and such, this, it was actually a very well put together film.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna, you know, when it comes to stabbing, I'm gonna throw a 4 out of 5 on there. And I'm also gonna, you know, throw this out there, and I think I've said this before, with films like this, you can't judge them on the same scale you would a Hollywood blockbuster.
No.
You have to really, and especially when it comes to horror, and that's why the reason why I love independent horror so much, and the reason why we've swung more towards talking about independent horror as often as possible, is because the low production value, give them a low production value and see what they come up with. And this was a film where they came up with a pretty good story that was lacking some technology and lacking a few things here and there. But otherwise, it's probably one of the better put together films we've seen.
Absolutely. Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you guys are saying, and I would have to give it a 4 out of 5. Again, like you were saying, not a perfect movie. A couple of things could have been a little better, but surprisingly, honestly, it's one of those things, when I hear the words independent film or independent horror, I cringe, just like
most
I do,
yeah.
You know, with when I hear the words asylum film, as we were talking about in our other show, you know, women protagonists in books, you know, I tend to cringe, but I was really surprised. And I was actually just looking at, what you were saying, Jason, as far as IMDb giving it a 2.1, I think it should be noted, though, that they're probably basing it on the original cut and not
the
cut that we watched, The Rise of Evil.
Right.
Yeah, because honestly, if they watched the same movie that we watched, you know, this, the recut, it would have to be definitely a higher score.
Yes, definitely. Now, I do want to let people know that if you want to watch the recut, as far as I know, the only place to get it right now is on Amazon streaming. That's where we saw it.
As of October of last year, now we can say that. But as of October of last year, there's a lot of people believing that it's probably going to hit Netflix within the next 6 months. So you might be able to find it there then. In the meantime, though, it's not, I mean, it cost me $6.
To buy it.
Yeah, to buy it. So
yeah,
off of Amazon.
Rent for 7-day rental is $2.99. So.
Yeah, and I bought it for $6 because to me, it's, you know, whether I rented it or bought it, I don't want to rent it and want to have it and watch it later. And so I bought it. And I'm glad I did. You know what? I tell you, it's on my iPhone now, and it's with me wherever I go when I want to watch a movie. It's one of them great movies. To me, this is a movie that isn't, you don't have to be in just a horror mood to watch it. It's a great anytime movie, especially a rainy day movie.
Yes. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up this one. And I just want to really quickly say that, as Jason mentioned at the top of this bonus segment, this is something we plan on doing every month. And of course, the best way to make it happen every month is if independent filmmakers out there have a feature film, send it to us. Let us know about it, where we can find it, and how we can talk, you know, how we can find out more information about it. We would love to do so, much like next month's discussion will be about a movie that Jason and I have had in the archives for almost a year. It's unfortunate to say. It's Rage, written and directed by Christopher Witherspoon.
Yes, it's been here forever, it seems like. And so we do need to pull that out, and we do need to watch it. And we'll get you a copy, Mike, so that you can watch it.
Yeah, because otherwise I'm just going to be talking out my butt.
Which is not that much different.
I was going to say, what would the difference be?
All right. And with that, I want to thank you guys for this independent.
Thank you, Matt. And thank you, Matt. And we're looking forward to having you and several guests on the show.
Yes. Bill, you're coming on.
Again.
Again. All right. And don't forget to get a hold of us by calling us at 503-454-6941 or sending us an email at creepercast or feedback at creepercast.com. Head to our website at creepercast.com, where you can leave reviews for us and tell us what you think about our reviews. See, now you can flip it around on us. Thank you guys, and we'll see you later.
Laters.
Oh, and Matt, don't forget to send me a copy of the soundtrack, because I really want it.